Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Looking for Love in All the Wrong Dust Jackets, a show where three disgruntled harpies talk to you about everything we love in romance, whether that's books, movies, TV shows, whatever we like. My name's Liz.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Wiggles.
And welcome to the episode. And welcome to season two.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
Guess who's back? Back again. Barely left. Tell your friends.
That was amazing. So today we are reading the viral book, Bride by Allie Hazelwood. But before we talk about that, I got to warn the people, if you haven't figured it out by now, we are crass and unhinged and we swear and we're going to talk about all the nodding times. I meant to say all the naughty times, but it came out all the nodding times, which is appropriate for this book.
Yep.
I need to go to bed. Anyway.
It's 9:30 in the morning.
I never should have left bed.
It's 9 o'clock on a Saturday.
Stop it.
How many times am I going to sing today?
Anyway, what have you guys been up to? Talk to me. Get me caught up on your lives.
Okay, well, so I read the last of the Improbable Meet Cute series, Royal Valentine by Sarah Wilson. It was cute. It was cute. That's all I got to say about it. And then I went totally unhinged.
And shocking.
So I'm sure you've seen on TikTok those really terrible ads for those really terrible short, like, video stories.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I was morbidly curious.
Oh, no.
It's literally the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And so I watched so much of it.
Wait, what is it on an app?
Yeah. I like even paid for it. I didn't even care. Like, I was like, I think I'm $16 into this garbage because it is so bad. Like, it's like you, what you imagine it being as bad, you're wrong. It's worse. And yeah.
What is the app called?
Which one is it? It's called Short TV.
Oh, no.
It's so bad.
Now it's, I have to know.
Basically, if you were ever on that app, Galeta, whatever the fuck, yeah. I don't know how you pronounce it. They took those stories and were like, let's get actors to come in and do these. When I tell you, so the one I watched was a Wolf Shifter one. First of all, the wolves are like somebody, they like feel like they're from 90s animation, and then they're very poorly applied. Like the costumes look like somebody was like, I'm going to find nice-ish things because you know they're alphas of the blah 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 pack, and it's like, but I wish that was the worst, because the worst is the acting. Imagine you go and get a degree in acting and you spend your life delivering lines like, no, that's my Omega, leave her alone. So anyway, check it out. That's what I got.
That was great.
I had kind of a rough week, so I watched Grey's Anatomy. I needed an excuse to cry. And then I watched the new season of Blown Away.
I don't know what that is.
So it's a Netflix reality show that is, it's kind of like Great British Bake Off, but it's glass blowing.
Oh, I think I do know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, so it's on like season four now. So I watched the new season of that because that's fun to watch. There is no drama. It's all about glass blowing, and that is fascinating. And then last night I had me and another one of my friends, she was like, you know
whoa,
what?
Whoa, 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 whoa. You have other friends?
I do indeed, yes.
How dare you?
Betrayal.
She was like, you know what? We need a we're going to put roots in the couch kind of night. So we're just going to rot on the couch and watch trash TV. So we did that. We watched some Below Deck. We watched some ASMR videos. We watched Karen freakouts. Like we put roots in and chilled.
See, I wasn't invited. I'm sorry.
I'm kidding. She's not.
Okay. Well, that's nice.
Yeah. What'd you do, Liz?
I read or listened to Resting Witch Face by Juliette Cross, which is the Jules Rubin one. It's clearly the best in the bunch because it's like book five, and she plotted or put into every single other book their story. So by the time you get to book five, she's just like, and they're together. And I'm like, yes, I've been waiting.
Finally! It's so good.
Yeah, that one's really good, especially when it's read by Aiden Snow.
God damn.
Audiobook daddy. We will never not be obsessed with him at this point. Yeah.
If he turns out that he's like a bad guy as well, I'm going to be so mad. I'm not going to be okay for like weeks.
I will never forget. It was one of our very first episodes that we recorded that I was like, but guys, I listened to the audiobook and like we got done recording. I'm like, no, you guys don't understand. Because I think it was for the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
Sure was.
And I was like, you guys don't understand. And it was his point of view to start out with. And so I just started the book and both of you were like, ah! I'm like, yep, I listened to that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I do have another one.
Do you now?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear about it.
I've been in an audiobook thing lately. I don't know. But I listened to I'm Glad My Mom Died mm-hmm. by Jeanette McCurdy. It's really good, mm-hmm. but woof, is it really hard. Mm-hmm. Lots of trigger warnings for child abuse and eating disorders. And
the hardest part, I think, when I read it was in the narrative where she did not realize she was being abused.
Yeah.
And you're just mm-hmm. like, no, stop.
Yeah. I think she did a really good job of like letting the reader know, hey, these things are happening and I'm uncomfortable, but my mom just loves me so much. And I'm like, you poor abused child. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I DNF'd a book, which I was very proud of myself for being like, no, I don't like it. I'm not going to read it.
Sometimes you got to do that.
Yeah. But that's what I did. So let's talk about Bride, huh?
Well.
Fuck yeah, let's talk about Bride.
I'm going to mention a couple things about Allie Hazelwood. But if you want more information, I'm pretty sure we talked about her when we did our episode, Love on the Brain. So that's a great time to learn more about her. Quick overview. A neuroscientist who's like, what if I wrote smut? And I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's our age, which is super cool. Millennials. Bow, 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 bow.
She's a neuroscientist and a best-selling author?
Yeah.
What a bitch.
I know. God damn it. her next book that's coming out in June is Not in Love. So check that one out. Promises to be good. Other books that have come out since we did Love on the Brain, Check and Mate, which is YA, mm-hmm. Which means I probably won't ever read it. And Love Theoretically. So, yeah. But here's the fun news. I saw an interview that she did where she said she wants to write a sequel to Bride.
Well, she hints it at the end.
Yeah.
With her bestest best friend.
Uh-huh. 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 Well, and if it's not them, there are other options as well.
There's so many options. There's Owen, her brother.
Yes.
What's his life like?
Right? There was a moment where I was like, is Owen gonna get with the well, we'll get into
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
we'll get into it.
Let's start off with what the hell this book is about.
Danny
going over to Danny Connor. So I'm unhinged, it's fine. So Bride is about basically a society where vampires, werewolves, or shifters and humans all kind of coexist, but they are very tense. Everything be very tense.
Mm-hmm.
The vampires and humans have this whole collateral system set up where they send a child as a hostage for if shit goes down, they're like, yeah, we can kill this child first. And it always has to be the child of a politician, of somebody in charge of whatever society. So our main girl, Misery, she was the collateral as a child. And then she got back to the vampires and they didn't treat her like she was one of them because she had grown up among humans and everything. So basically she gets her own identity and everything. She has fake human papers and then she is working and living in the human world with her best friend who was supposed to be her like human companion when she was collateral and is now just her bestie. Well, all of a sudden her bestie disappears. She's looking for her and everything, and she gets summoned back to the vampires. And apparently now she's getting married to a shifter alpha because they're doing a whole different collateral situation.
Mm-hmm.
Discuss.
Oh, and we will. Oh, we will.
Many ways. I've only ever read one other Allie Hazelwood, which was Love on the Brain that we read for the podcast. But this book, from what I'm remembering, feels like it's written differently. Like, there's still the sass, but it, from what I'm remembering, and Wiggles, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you've read at least one more book than I have of hers. But it feels like the writing style is just, like, a little different in this book.
My experience with reading Allie Hazelwood is that her craft is improving with every book.
Sure.
And so I think that that's probably what you're picking up on. Like, it's in some ways it feels like her plot devices that she really likes are all still in there, but it does also feel like she's approaching the conversation a little bit differently. It's almost like she's gotten out of the phase where she feels like she has to explain everything. Like, you can let the reader sort of come to some conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely happened in this book. Sometimes I think it went a little too far, though. Like, mm-hmm. I'd be reading a scene and all of a sudden literally the next paragraph would just be a different scene with no like actual break or transition, and I would have to go back and be like, whoa, wait a minute, we were in the middle of this conversation and now she's over here.
It's true.
What is happening?
There are pros and cons to this, right? Yeah, I also think that the other difference is I don't know. I never have found any of her fanfics. I don't know what she was sure. Like, the pseudonym she was writing under even. But it feels like maybe this is more her bread and butter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that writing contemporary romance is just her modifying things. I don't know. I don't want to presume, but.
Well, and that is a thing that sometimes authors do, is they switch kind of, not genres, because it's still the romance genre, but type of romance. And yeah, I definitely felt it more in this book than I did Love on the Brain. Like, I didn't hate Love on the Brain, but it was not like my super jam.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked Bride. And I wondered if that was more a me bias thing, because this is much more my jam than Love on the Brain is. But maybe I'm not. Maybe I was also picking up on maybe this is more her jam.
Well, I think, too, that there's maybe a different style approach when she takes this STEM aspect a little bit out of it. I mean, mm-hmm. It's still present here.
Misery.
I keep wanting to call her Mercy, which is not right.
No.
Misery is like a computer science nerd, mm-hmm. right? But it's not quite the same as like writing in a STEM environment.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if that detachment allows her a little more freedom to not feel like she has to make sure you understand the world she's bringing you into.
I could see that, yeah.
Just a thought. But yeah, so I mean, like, let's talk about Misery a little bit, because we are only reading from her point of view, except for those little excerpts at the beginning, which I fucking loved.
Loved those. So the only time we get Low, who is the werewolf husband, alpha bro, the only time we get his perspective is these like little snippets that are like at the top of every chapter. And I loved them so much. They were so good.
Yes. And they kind of contextualize what's going to happen in the chapter ahead. Yep. And you're like, ooh, he loves her.
Well, it also lets us as the reader in on things that Misery doesn't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sometimes I just wanted to reach through the book and grab her and be like, no, he does like you. Stop it.
To be fair, he was fully telling lies.
True.
Yeah. You know? Can't even be mad at her about it, because, yeah, she wasn't telling the truth.
Yeah. But starting with her childhood, so she's born a twin in the vampire world, which just doesn't happen, apparently. And
they just have low birth rates in general.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she, like, between the two of them, her mother does not survive giving birth. And so because she was the second one to come out and her mom died after, they named her Misery and then named her brother fucking Owen.
Right. Just like a regular ass name.
Just like a regular schmegular name. And especially dumb when Omen is right there.
It true.
Right. Like, Why not? I don't understand. It makes perfect sense. Omen to misery. Okay, I'm fine. I just needed to get that out of my system. Like, Allie, you really shit the bed on that one.
Or she did it on purpose.
To irk people like me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, great success. But so then her and her brother grow up very close in spite of their dad being kind of a, like a shit heel. Not kind of, he is.
He is a shit heel.
And her dad's like, oh, we're going to do this collateral thing. I pick you, misery, go. And just like sends her off to the human world without a care in the world. And he's like, all right, it was nice knowing you. Stop crying. I'll visit you once a year. Like, what? And so her brother and her like drift apart, or so she perceives it. Later on, we find out that her brother is like never gotten over that.
Right. Because she has to live with the humans for 10 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Starting at age like 8. So basically, all of her formative years are being this outcast among humans.
Yeah. She gets let out when she turns 18.
And while she's there, they're like, wow, this little vampire child is super depressed. That's crazy. I don't know why she can't just be happy with caregivers. Whatever.
Caregivers that abuse her.
Right. And they're like, oh, I know. We'll steal an orphan.
Yeah.
Great. Become best friends now. And they do.
Which, I mean, it does work.
Yeah.
In the sense that it's like, well, you probably need somebody your own age.
Yeah.
To interact with.
Still, I feel like it works not because they wanted it to, but because like it's one of those in the trenches together things.
Yeah.
Like they're like, well, your life's fucked up. My life's fucked up.
We're stuck here together.
Right. It's just like, what the fuck?
I actually really appreciated the relationship between the two of them because it wasn't like all sunshines and rainbows.
Mm-hmm.
They fucking fight. And like they siblings. Fucking fight hard and like siblings. And I appreciate that because sometimes the like bestie relationships in books are just like everything is peaches and cream. They can do no wrong with each other. And that's not reality. Like, no. We fight about shit. Like,
sometimes you got to just pour an alcoholic beverage on your friend's head.
You deserved it.
You deserved it.
I was going to say, no one has poured an alcoholic beverage on me.
Yeah, so this relationship between Misery and Serena is the whole catalyst of the book.
One of the things I like about this book and about the choices that Misery ends up making is that it all is really about her friendship, and everything else is like chaos bonus that's been thrown into her life. Everything is about, I'm going to find my friend no matter what. Consequences be damned. And yeah. I appreciate that they didn't just go with this idea of, oh, she has a best friend and she's an inconvenient plot device. It's, she has a best friend. This is the plot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There happens to be this hot man also.
The whole point from beginning to end is find this person. And also that concept doesn't just like fade away, because sometimes I feel like the, oh shit, I'm doing something for my friend. Oh, hot guy, bye friend, mm-hmm. You no longer exist.
And it was never that. It was always, I need to find Serena. You are the only lead I have, which is the only reason I was down with this situation.
Yeah.
Well, and her logic makes sense. You don't realize it at first. You're like, okay, but I don't understand how you wanting to find your friend leads to you marrying a werewolf. But then, like, it all becomes clear. She kind of approached this like a mystery novel a little bit.
A little bit.
Which I enjoyed.
I also enjoyed that the flashbacks to when Misery found out that Serena was missing felt very rooted in reality for a fantasy paranormal novel, of like trying to go to the cops and being like, this person is missing. I know that they're missing. Mm-hmm. I've been to their apartment. They are missing. And the cops just being like, what am I going to do about it?
Well, and that's unfortunately really well based in reality.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we watch true crime. This is a true crime house. Right? Correct.
Yes.
And the thing is, a lot of times the cops are the reason that these people get away, is because they just don't take people seriously, or they aren't actually going to investigate it, or they don't think it matters, or they just fuck up evidence. But that's a different thing.
Right.
God damn it. So I listened to this podcast called In the Dark, and their second season has gone viral because they basically helped Curtis Flowers like get out of jail. This man, like, you should just listen to it. It's amazing. But they did all this investigative journalism into it and were like, you did really shitty cop work and this is not the guy who did the crime, right? The season prior to that, they're talking about this kid who goes missing. And the cops, this kid was alive.
Oh, God.
The cops go over to his neighbors, don't investigate the house. And he was alive in the house at the time. Anyway, so, right. Like, this is the kind of shit that I love romance novels for, because you can make a story that, yes, is primarily focused on the romance that these two characters are building, but good romance writers know that that's not the whole story. That's just a portion of the story. And so her putting in details, like the cops just not wanting to listen to a vampire, make total sense.
Right. Well, and when you talk about romance, it doesn't happen in a bubble. Like, you're still living your lives. Mm-hmm. And Low and Misery's kind of shared detective work that they're doing together trying to solve these problems is also one of the things that pushes them together. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I also like, so, you know, we touched on it with, like, you get bits and pieces from flashbacks and stuff. She also kind of does that with the lore of the different species.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like they ever did a list of no, yes, no about vampire lore or shifter lore or anything like that. But it's kind of like, because they've been so sequestered from each other, they don't know what's real or not. And so it's just little conversations of being like, yeah, no, that's not a thing.
Well, and it's the exact kind of thing that, like, if any of us were put in that position, we would absolutely do. Like, it'd be like, okay, so the garlic thing.
Right.
Real or not real? Like, I gotta... I just want to know because I really like Italian food. So, you know, like, yeah.
I just appreciated that they didn't do the stereotypical yes, no, yes, no, yes. It was just kind of like that. No, that's not a thing randomly.
I also liked that the vampires were just a little bit different than what you'd expect. So typically in a lot of things that I read, vampires are the strongest, the fastest, the whateverest. And in this book, they kind of seemed like they were just like barely above humans. And then the werewolves, the shifters, were much stronger, much faster, all of this stuff.
And better at procreating.
And better at fucking.
Yeah.
Well, and in society, they are not above humans. They are actually the lowest tier because they could be the most easily wiped out.
Right. Because they are literally dying out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in some ways, human beings are the quote unquote top tier because they can populate so much faster than everybody else. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about Allie Hazelwood kind of creating her own set of rules for all of them? Like, for example, the werewolves have green blood and the vampires have purple blood.
So I swear that as soon as I started reading this book, we were in maybe chapter 2. And I was like, are the vampires Vulcans and the werewolves are Klingons? Because the thing that Misery's dad says all the time is, we always do everything for the betterment of the vampires, right? And I was like, so the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one, which is a reference to a Star Trek movie.
I basically say that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire time I was just like, and the Vulcans are gonna live with the Klingons. Like, it's
just like, here's the thing though, Allie Hazelwood's a nerd.
I know.
So probably.
I also got that. I was like, what happened here? Nerddom? Is there secret nerddom in here?
Yeah. And in my head, I could just hear Bones going, those green blooded hobgoblins. Which he says about Vulcans, but still. I love that she committed to it is kind of my thing. Mm-hmm. Instead of just being like, oh, here's this like weird fact I'm going to do. Because the werewolves, when they blushed, they had like an olive tone instead of like a red tone or whatever. I was like, well, you committed. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. If you're going to do something weird, go all in.
Yeah.
I also like that she changed things slightly, but not so off the wall that they're unrecognizable as creatures.
Well, and that's kind of what you have to do when we have these preconceived notions of what a vampire and a werewolf is. Like, you can change it, but you can't change it so much that I'm, like, confused, you know?
Well, and I didn't have a problem with any of the changes she made. Mm-mm. But, you know, one of the advantages of reusing conceptions of various different monsters and things like that is that the lore already exists. Mm-hmm. And so when you deviate from it, it kind of needs to serve a purpose. Otherwise, right. you're just wasting time with info dumping. And so I feel like that happened a little bit where it was like, this didn't need to be that different.
Yeah, I don't know why she changed their blood, because there was never a point where it was used to like distinguish anything. There was never like a, oh, there's blood over there, I wonder what it's from. It's green, so it's a werewolf. You know, there was never like a moment when it mattered.
Mm-hmm.
At least none that I can remember.
And maybe that's a concept she's going to touch on in her next book for it. Like maybe this is, maybe. That's a, like a little preamble thing. And so it has to be established first, right?
The only thing I could think of why it mattered is with Serena. So the big reveal at the end mm-hmm. is that Serena is half were. Mm-hmm. She's one of the few hybrids, because apparently they've gotten all the way to the modern age and nobody thought, what if we fucked together? Which I thought was a little weird. I was like, how are we this far and nobody has thought of hybrids?
I think they probably just have been killing them off the way that human beings kill off things that they don't like, people sure. that they don't like.
Sure. Yeah. So the only reason I thought the blood maybe could matter is because Misery is remembering Serena as always having human blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So, but it didn't seem that valuable.
I'll be honest. I wouldn't say it took me out of the experience, but all I kept thinking of was, remember in like the late 90s when they were like, I know what we're going to do. We're going to make different colors of ketchup. That's all I could think the whole time.
That purple ketchup, man.
It tastes like normal ketchup.
It did.
But there it was no special. Purpose.
I never got
there was
the
a green ketchup, too.
Oh, my mother would never buy it. I had friends that
yes.
their parents bought it. My mom was like, you can eat the red ketchup and you shut
can,
up about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you can eat the cheap ketchup that's like 80 cents a bottle.
Correct,
okay?
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with you? But yeah, that's what it just kept triggering in my brain. I was like, I remember that. I remember that. Okay. So you just got green ketchup in your veins.
I will say I don't ever remember being like interested enough in the colored ketchup to be like to ever throw a fit about it or anything. No. I was like, cool, I got ketchup for my chicken nuggies. I'm happy.
I didn't trust that stuff after the jar of peanut butter and jelly together. I had that one time and I was like, this is hot garbage. And so I was like, I bet this other crap they're coming up with is hot garbage.
It is hot garbage. That peanut butter jelly mix is, we never got it, but I have tried it and it is hot garbage. And I'm like, that's the ultimate lazy. You can't make a PB&J.
Yeah. I don't know how people like it. The peanut butter's wrong. Just, it's like grainy.
Yeah.
How do you fuck it up? You just take the peanut butter and the jelly and you put them in the same jar. How would the manufacturers fuck that up so much?
I think it's probably because it's not name brand peanut butter. So like, I don't think they partnered with like Jif or something. Like sure. Smucker's was just like, we'll make our own shitty peanut butter.
No, can't do that.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Peanut butter brands are a well-established thing.
They're important.
And
I am not futzy about many brands. Like, I will happily do the store brand for many things. Peanut butter is not one of them.
Choosy moms choose Jif, and that's what it is.
We have Skippy in our house.
That's the only other one I will accept.
Yeah, that's the only acceptable notion.
Otherwise, I grew up having the red jar, which is Jif.
Yeah,
and Pappy likes Skippy, and since he eats more peanut butter than I do, he wins.
That's fair.
I mean, fair enough.
Skippy does have a better crunchy peanut butter.
I hate crunchy peanut butter, and anybody who eats it is wrong in the head.
I haven't bought it in years, so I wouldn't know. Comparing the two, Skippy wins that one.
While we're talking about, like, you know, all the differences between that Allie Hazelwood made to the expected vampire werewolf, the other thing she did is she changed how vampires view drinking blood.
Because
it's in almost every single book, it's this pleasurable act and they're seeking it out and there's like dens of sin where you fuck and you drink the blood and it's mm-hmm. great. But in this book it's viewed as like this utilitarian, like, we go in the corner, we drink our blood, it's done,
it takes 2 minutes, I have a straw,
right?
Except that if you're with the right person, it is very sexual.
Except,
and so I almost wonder if the thought process was, they were like, that's messy, and we're not engaging in that messy behavior, because like her brother is like, don't do that anymore, it gets complicated, please stop doing this. And she's like, well, it was weird because this, he's like, don't tell me anything else.
Yeah, so when Misery has to bite low to like as a distraction, diversion, whatever, from this espionage they're doing.
Very hot scene.
It's a very hot scene.
And it's done in a library.
She is so confused by it, because the other thing is Misery didn't grow up with vampires. She mm-hmm. grew up with humans. So mm-hmm. she doesn't know jack shit about being a vampire. She's like the worst vampire to ever vampire.
I think she even says exactly yes. that. She's like, so we have somebody who's never had their blood sucked before, and me, the worst vampire. This should go swimmingly.
Right. So then she's talking to her brother about it, like, hey, what's this about? He's like, just don't talk to me about it. Don't ever do it again. It's like a mom having to like listen to their kid describe like masturbating for the first time. They're like, no. Yes. Nope. No.
We don't do that. It's bad for you. You'll go blind.
But apparently it's supposed to like potentially form bonds and like weird attachments or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, hey man, that's already happened. We're yeah, past that.
They've passed that.
They already like each other.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is, she's not only the worst vampire, if you will. Like, her only experience with drinking blood is drinking it through a straw from a blood bag. And so the concept of even drinking from somebody's vein is like, what?
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, they're kind of revolted by it. They're like, ew, no. Yeah.
And then instinct takes over, though, and she manages to do it just fine.
She mm-hmm. does. Yeah. She comes out on top, if you will.
The other interesting change that she made is to werewolves and mates, because mates don't happen to everyone. And I think that there are plenty of books where that happens too. But the way Lo is describing a mate, it's not something that both sides feel. Like, just one of them could get the like mate attraction thing to the other person, and the other person is just like, yeah, bro, I don't feel that. And instead of both of them getting it, it was just an interesting...
Well, I kept wondering if this was... I mean, I'm sure it's happened before, but I don't think that's also the norm with you having a mate. It felt very much like he was trying to talk himself through the reality that she's never going to have that same experience as him.
Sure.
Because he would say so many things throughout the book that were about her to her without her being able to understand that that's what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like he needed to desperately voice these things to her without her understanding.
Yeah.
Which is a whole thing.
Yeah. Well, but I get his reasoning, right? He doesn't mm-hmm. want to tell her that she is his mate. And I'm sure at first he was probably freaked out about it. Like, oh, a vampire? Why am I getting the mate feels vibes for a vampire? We are hated enemies.
Mm-hmm.
But then also because he knows a lot about her from just learning about her past and reading her file, as she says. But he doesn't want to put this like obligation on her when her whole life has just been being trapped by obligations.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a nice thing to do, I suppose.
Well... And the thing about talking about how Allie Hazelwood has changed this a little bit is that it feels like she put her science touch on it.
Right.
Where she never outright says it, but biologically, a species will choose to evolve rather than die.
Right.
So it makes sense that they would start developing these like biological bonds with one another to try and force evolution.
Like between the werewolf and the vampire?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Or werewolves and humans, right?
Right.
So it kind of it's the other way of looking at why have they not hooked up before. It kind of makes you wonder if previously, from an evolutionary standpoint, there was only disgust, and now they're starting to like get to this point where they do find each other attractive because biology.
Right.
I did think it was interesting. Also, she made the change of, well, vampires are not born with much in the way of sweat glands. And so the way that she smells is complicated, but also her version of scenting is through his blood. Like, she can smell people's blood in them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did think that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. And then also she eats peanut butter, which apparently is supposed to be revolting for vampires to eat. And yet she still did it. It was her dirty secret as she ate peanut butter. And I'm still trying to figure out how she processes the peanut butter in her body, because that was never explained.
Well, it's never implied that vampires don't have the ability to digest things.
Well, I mean, they are drinking blood, so they would have at least some way to break that down into the components that they need, right? So she says she can eat a little, so I'm guessing she can't eat a big steak dinner, but something like smooth or maybe even crunchy peanut butter, her body can break it down a little bit.
Well, it makes me wonder if, from the vampire biology standpoint, if it's that her stomach is, if their stomachs are just very small. So the idea of masticating food and your stomach acids being able to break that down, that's not, they're not evolutionarily built for that.
True, I could see that, yeah.
And I would, my understanding, and maybe this is just my headcanon, but my understanding of it was that vampires all could eat human food and be fine. It just wouldn't be a pleasant experience for them, so they don't.
I would kind of assume they also maybe wouldn't get what they need from it.
Right.
Like, nutrition-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They also make it seem like it's kind of just shameful because vampires don't see eating for enjoyment as a thing.
It's true.
And so they just kind of think it's revolting culturally as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she does also say, when Lo is asking her about eating, because he's also kind of like, what the fuck, a vampire is eating food? This is weird. She also says that they don't have the right teeth for it.
Mm-hmm.
I could see masticating with fangs being weird.
Right.
Yeah. They don't have like molars or something.
Well, and the way we eat, we have to grind everything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I would imagine fangs would get in the way of that.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it was enjoyable to read something that was a little bit different, and it felt well thought out.
Right.
I've read somewhere they're like, I just wanted this to be different because they're special. They sparkle. Okay, Stephanie. Yeah. Okay.
No, these vampires didn't sparkle. They do burn in the sun, but not like, oh my God, one ray of sun and we're flames, but like a really extreme sunburn all the time.
Right. Like extreme photosensitivity if you were a human being kind of thing.
She does like smolder. It takes a little longer because she does do that when she goes out to save Lo's sister.
Yeah, we should probably talk about, is it J.L. Moreland?
J.E.?
L.E.
L.E. Moreland. We should talk about L.E. Moreland.
Liliana.
Yeah, so the whole reason that Misery agrees to marry Lo is when she was searching through Serena's apartment after she goes missing, she finds this scrap of paper in their unique kind of coded language with each other. And it reads out L.E. Moreland. And so she hears Lo Moreland, why is Serena writing his name down in her planner or her journal, whatever it was, only to find out that that's not Lo. It's Liliana, or Anna is what they call her, Lo's little sister, who is 7.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some debate about that. She's 6 going on 7, and she likes to flip-flop on that one.
That's right.
She always says she's 7, but holds up 6 fingers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Lo says she's better at lying with her words, but not with her fingers.
Insane. This finger comes out. Just can't lie.
I love the way that Anna was written. It's pretty common to have these like children in books that are used to show one character's soft side. So Lo is this like hard shell of a man. Like, you can't get to know him. He's always very like rough exterior, cold and stuff, except around Anna, at least from Misery's perspective, around Anna, he's like warm and inviting and always trying to take care of her. So the plot device, or the like whatever you would call Anna, is common, but I still love it. And I still love that she attached herself to Misery, or in a way that feels very realistic.
Well, it also shows Misery coming around to a little softer side despite her every thought process and her every want. Because, like, she's pretty cold to Anna, but, like, Anna's just like, nah.
I genuinely love people who don't understand kids, that have kids that cling to them.
Yeah.
Real life or in books, I find it amusing every single time. The way they'll be, like, playing fetch with a kid. They'll be like, go get your teddy bear. Get the fuck away from me. And the kid's like, yeah! Oh, God, I love that shit.
And it's totally hilarious. What happened in this book. Like, yeah. She's like, I don't fucking want you anywhere near me. And Anna's like, you know what I'm going to do?
She's like, can we cuddle?
Right near you.
Which, I mean, kids do that. Yeah. I didn't do that. I had too much anxiety as a child. But, like, there are plenty of kids that, especially when there's a new person in the house.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a new person. New person means new stuff.
I feel like there's typically two kid reactions to new people. One, hide behind mom's legs.
Yes.
That was, or, you're my new best friend, and I need to show you all of my toys. So correct. This one is Molly. This one is Francis. And that's George Bigglesworth. Don't worry about it.
Over there is Josiah Farmson. Josiah Farmson. He won't be here long, don't worry.
Oh, Josiah Farmson.
I'm going to make Pappy regret that.
Josiah Farmson.
For Josiah Farmson!
Yeah. And I love that Misery was just like, no, child, stop. And she didn't know how old she was. She's like, she's either 3 or 13.
The thing is, I know people who are exactly that. They yeah. Like, their intelligence when it comes to children is so low. They're just like, I don't know, it can walk, so I don't know what age it is now.
Right. A little off topic, my favorite is Pappy, because he's just like, I don't know, it's talking age. And I was like, okay. So he's like 4, and I'm like, no.
Nope.
So I did really like the scene, you know, despite Misery not wanting anything to do with this child, there is a scene where I think everybody is all like wolfing out for the full moon or whatever, and they leave Anna in the house to be protected because some people can't really control themselves very well during the shift. A lot of people can, but there are certain people that have issues with this, so they want to make sure that Anna's protected, and Anna gets scared and crawls in bed with Misery. And then when Lo comes to check on Anna, she, like, whips a knife out of nowhere.
A steak knife that she found in the kitchen.
Like, she was just like, this is my child, bitch.
You touched,
like,
my baby.
And right. it's a pinnacle moment of, you're like, oh, she really got in there.
Mm-hmm.
She rooted into your feelers and lodged herself there.
Is that before or after she runs outside to save Anna?
After. It is after.
Yeah.
Which is probably something to talk about in and of itself, because it kind of shapes everything that happens afterwards.
Right.
So Misery is not wanted there. Everybody's kind of treating her like shit, kind of except for Lo, but even he's like trying really hard to keep her at a distance.
Right. And then the other person who's good with her is Mick. I believe. Is that his name?
Yeah. Yes. But he's not that good with her at that point. It's later. Basically, everybody goes from, I don't care if you die, except that the alliance depends on it. But after she goes out of her way to try and save Anna, suddenly everybody's like, oh, maybe there is some good things about you.
Right.
Whoa. That's controversial, I know, but whoa. So she has this confrontation with this teenage werewolf named Max, and he's calling her all these like awful names and saying that, you know, vampires killed his family, which is probably true. And she's doing her best to like avoid the fight until he finally lunges at her, and she's like, okay, bitch.
Yeah.
Me and my bestie took self-defense classes, and I'm going to take you. And she kind of does. So their assumption is that she was going to bite him and all this, that, and the other thing. So they already didn't have a good opinion of her. And then she, like, their opinion shifts to being even worse. Like, she could bite any of us at any point. And so when she sees Max, like, toddling off with this kid, and no one's paying attention because she's watching from their barbecue from, sadly, from the window. And you're like, oh, that's really sad.
It's really sad.
But the sun is up, so she can't go out there.
Right. Well, I think she said she could be in the shade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if she was like covered up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But she sees that none of them are going after her. And she's like, okay, any minute they're going to realize the kid is gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they, from her perspective, don't. Mm-hmm. And so she rushes out there barefoot, chasing after them in the forest, and is like, you better fucking leave that kid alone, bro. And all the werewolves come out and were like, could you stay out of it? Because they were performing this like sting operation to see who wants to try and kidnap Anna and why.
Right. But, you know, if you don't let everybody in on it, yeah, you're eventually going to have somebody who fucks it up.
Well, and I
just don't think any of them thought she would care enough.
Right.
To, oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Or even be conscious, because it is in the middle of, well, it's towards evening. It's getting towards the end of the day, but the sun was still up. But I legit don't think that they thought she would care enough to be like, what the fuck? And she's like, no, see, child.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't get children. I don't really want them around me all that much, but she was not afraid of me, even though I came into her house and stole her bedroom.
Well, and regardless of her being away from vampire culture, it is still ingrained in her that children are valuable.
Yep.
Right.
Because they can't have many. So she's looking at it also probably from that perspective of like, holy shit, you're just going to let a full ass child escape? What is wrong with you? Yeah.
So she, quote unquote, rescues the kid, even though everybody was actually watching what was happening. They were mm-hmm. just faking it. And then they're kind of like, which, all right,
I'm still not cool with that. They used a child as bait. Like,
She does chew them out for it. She's like, the fuck were you thinking? And Lo's like, well, I needed to find out. And she's like, a child.
Right. You don't use children as bait.
Right.
Your sibling.
Yeah. But it shifts everything for everyone. Like,
right.
Her relationship with Lo changes. Her relationships with the other werewolves change. They're suddenly like, oh, there's a person in there and not just fangs.
Yeah. Right. Like, oh, we knew she wasn't actually in danger, but you didn't know that. And you were going to get yourself killed in order to protect somebody that you're not supposed to really care about.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they actually start including her in at least some things. She gets supervised access to technology.
Well, and it's clear that the other werewolves know that she's Lo's mate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even before he officially confesses it, like, I feel like anybody who's ever read any kind of werewolf romance was like, at the wedding, we're like, so they're mates. Right. Understood.
Yep. Yes. Oh, yeah. I was just like, Lo, just tell her. Just tell her.
There was like one throwaway line. So he not attacks her at the wedding, but kind of. Like, gets all up in her space and is like, why do you smell like this?
Right.
And I was like, I see. So this is a mate thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then his rationale later on, but not too far down the road, is, oh, well, they did something to tamper with the way you smell. And that's why you're not really my mate. Something is wrong.
Yeah, because vampires know anything about mates, which right. he finds out as Misery asks him so many questions.
So many questions. But I would be asking the same questions. Right. Like, I was just like, yes, ask him that one. Also follow up with this one.
Shifting gears a little bit, I love that Lo could not technology.
No.
Oh, so badly.
He's like a boomer.
To be fair, I know people our age who cannot technology.
I get it. I know people younger than us that can't technology. And I'm like, your whole life is technology. How do you not know how to do this?
Yeah. So he's going to go into the enemy werewolves, the mate of the alpha that he killed, and try to get into their system and like try to hack into their system or whatever. And Misery's just like, no, well, you can't just magically learn how to do this. What are you doing?
I love that Alex, who is like terrified of Misery for the longest time, is still looking at her with like, please help me.
Help me. I love that when she walks in, Lo's literally about to punch the computer, and Alex is like, no, don't do that. And she's like, percussive maintenance really isn't going to work in this situation.
Well, because Lo is trying to follow Alex's instructions on like how to write code because you'll have to, once he gets there and gets onto a computer, have to be able to like go through and write these commands into the computer to do what they needed to do. And Lois just like, I'll figure it out when I get there. And I'm like,
no, you won't.
He's literally doing the one finger typing.
Right.
And I'm like, can't take this.
And here's the thing. I am, admittedly, when you look at my technological ability, I don't have a ton. I can absolutely get by. I do not do one finger typing. I figured out with help how to edit this podcast. You know, I can do things, but I am definitely more on the like layman side of things. And even I was just like, no, sir, you know, figure out in the moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm much better at you at this than you are, and I couldn't figure it out in the moment.
Right? Like, you didn't actually need to have full-on tech people there being like, bro, you can't do this. You just literally probably Anna could have come in and done better.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
he's so bad.
Oh my gosh. So Misery then is like, just take me with you. just take me with you.
I'm your wife. It's a good excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he's like, I don't know if that's a good idea for a lot of reasons that he doesn't communicate to her.
Yeah.
And then he waits until they land the plane, which apparently he pilots. And I'm like, okay.
By so the you way, can handle life. Those buttons, but a computer screen's too hard. Right. Explain, make it make sense, Lo.
By the way, she had a line when they got to the airport and they were getting onto this like private plane. She like they pull up and she goes, oh, honey. Are we rich? Right, I was like, right. Oh my God, I love her so much.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
can we talk about that sentence scene?
That's what I was going to go into. Good. Yeah. Because one of the things he doesn't describe to her is that he's going to have to mark her or mm-hmm. send her so that like everybody knows that she is his, which I mean, seemed a bit excessive. You know, he's bringing her there. They're married. It seems. Yeah, whatever.
Well, he does a lot of things where he's like, don't worry about it. It's a werewolf thing.
Yes. But he waits until they land the plane there to be like, all right, we got to do this now.
Well, and she's so distracted. She's like, oh, these other werewolves are coming. I got to mentally prepare. And he's like, so Misery, I'm going to need your permission. And she's like, yeah, do whatever you want with these limbs of mine. I don't give a shit. There are werewolves coming.
Right.
And he's like, no, ma'am. Please listen to me.
Which, I mean, from her perspective, I would have been like that too. Like, okay, like, all yeah, right,
fine, whatever. Let's get this over with.
I don't know what you got to do.
You got to like rub up on me like a dog. Fine,
whatever. But then when he does do it, I was breathless.
Yes. Yes.
I had to put, after that, I read that scene, I had to like put the book down for a minute and I was like, they don't actually do anything, but it was hot.
Well, I mean, he does put his face all up on her neck.
Yes.
And then spins her around and like bites her neck.
Yes.
Not enough to break the skin, but like enough to get his business all up on her.
Yes.
And I'm just like, huh.
Yes. Hello. And is fully grinding behind her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I was not ready.
Now just imagine, you both read this. It was read to me.
And?
Because they had dual narrators too.
Mm.
For so. What?
Just occasionally his actual like speaking.
Interesting.
Oh, it was true. It was truly duetted.
Yes.
Ooh.
Now I'm upset I didn't listen to this.
Now I might have to.
Yeah. In that moment, I was like, I need a 5-minute TikTok break.
I was surprised at how much that like affected me. I was like, what? They did. What? What do I expect coming forward? I don't know. And then they followed it up with another scene where they were like, bitch, you're horny.
The biting scene?
Yes. Like, they give us a little, like, break, a little preamble, if you will, where they're like, tense dinner. This is Super Ox. you're gonna pretend to go eat now. And like, that's all the break you get in between.
Right. Mm-hmm. In between the whole like, oh no, they're fine. The werewolf guards are going to find us in the study where I'm hacking into the computer. Kiss me. It works in movies.
I get her logic though.
Yeah. Oh, I get it.
Well, I just love that while that was happening, they were like, the commentary on it is, this is really fucking cheesy. This is not going to work.
Yes. But all I kept picturing until they went fully into the bite was like that part in Clue where they're like half the dead body.
Yes.
They're just like moving the limbs. And I was like, it's a sound strategy. If it works in Clue, it'll work anywhere else.
I mean, yes. Which Lowe's logic makes a lot of sense of like, we told them you're going to go feed. And werewolves don't know jack shit about vampires the same way vampires
right.
know jack shit about werewolves. So just bite me. They'll buy it. It'll all make sense.
And they do. They're horrified. They're like, oh my God.
Right. Yeah. Oh my.
And again, these werewolves immediately went back to the others and were like, you're never going to believe
yes.
what I just saw. And they're all like, come on.
It was very much, let's all go run and see this terrible thing.
Oh God.
Oh.
And then like the mate of the alpha he killed comes in and she's just like, well,
you know, if you've watched Hamilton and that moment where Thomas Jefferson finds out that Hamilton like cheated on his wife and he just goes, my God.
My God.
<That's> yeah.
You could have just kept that at home.
Right.
The David Diggs. My God. My that God. Is now going to be a way of describing something for me.
I hear it in my head all of the time. Like when I'm reading books or even in real life, I just hear, my God. Yes. Like, yes, this is a moment for that.
The one that sticks with me forever is like anytime I do something that is a little bit embarrassing, I just hear, pride is not the word I'm looking for. My head every time.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, just a glimpse into the crazy that is this.
I am now going to randomly text Wiggles. Pride is not the word I'm looking for.
Me and Pappy constantly go, like, whenever we're debating doing something or something happens, we just look at each other and go, okay, so we're doing this.
Yeah, that is the one that I do a lot. In my brain. Okay, so we're doing this.
Back to the biting scene, though.
Yes.
It's so hot that she actually, like, orgasms.
Yes.
Like, doesn't he pick her up and, like, hold her against a wall while she's, like, not gnawing, but, like, feeding on him?
Well, and he's obviously having a real good time, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, at one point, he says, more, take what you need. Like, he's, like, begging her to continue biting, and she's like, yeah, okay.
I wasn't planning on stopping. Yeah, that's great.
And then after that, she doesn't have to feed for a week. And she usually has to eat every day.
Yeah. Oof. That was powerful.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's funny. So before that, when they're doing the like peanut butter scene after yep. she's been burned and everything, and she confesses that vampires don't eat for pleasure. He goes, well, what do vampires do for pleasure? And then it, like, so it comes back around, right? And like, yeah. You're just like, I love that. I love yeah. that for me. I love that journey for me.
But then things kind of don't like get sexual again for a while because they have to share the bed and that they're staying in at this woman's mansion complex, whatever. And I believe that's where she like helps him fall asleep by like playing with his hair or something.
Well, and that's after she starts asking him all the questions about his mate. And right. So they have this conversation that he clearly doesn't want to have where he keeps like saying, misery, stop. And she's like, okay, but no, I need you to explain it to me because it doesn't make sense.
Yes. So on 201, the speech that Lowe gives to her is talking about if his mate doesn't have the mate bond or whatever back to him, and he's just saying, I would take anything she chooses to give me, the tiniest fraction or her entire world. I would take her for a single knowing, oh God, I would take her for a single night knowing that I'll lose her by morning, and I would hold on to her and never let go. I would take her healthy or sick or tired or angry or strong, and it would be my fucking privilege. And I'm like, huh.
And they wonder why we fucking read this shit.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
What, like, where's the mystery?
It's right there.
Yeah. Just do better. God damn. Oh.
And then
can you,
you
imagine
got...
someone saying that to you? Ooh.
Yeah, I'm.
I can't.
I married a version of that. So
must be fucking nice.
Yeah, must be fucking nice,
bitch.
So yes, actually, I can. But you know, you get guys on the apps being like,
"Want a dick pic?" No, I don't.
I stopped trying. I get nothing. My, I have my book boyfriends.
Yeah, book boyfriends are phenomenally better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And occasionally I get on the a kiss on the top of the head from your husband because he's like a brother to me.
He is very physically affectionate.
Yes.
With everyone. But I think you're the only person he kisses.
Aw.
Like that.
It definitely, he did that the other day at D&D. Like he walked by you, kissed you on the top of the head, and then walked by me and kissed me on the top of the head. And I was just like, aw. And I'm not a physically affectionate person. So it was just a little.
I think he's done that to you too, though.
Not on the top of the head. I get cheek kisses.
Oh. I'll let him know that you guys appreciate the kisses. I'm sure he would love to give them more.
I don't need increase in.
I was gonna say I don't need him to know always.
Yeah. You can keep that to yourself. The frequency is appropriate. We don't need to get into pretty bird territory. It's too much. Too much touching.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, so it's this like very touching moment, and she's missing the fact that he's saying this to her about her, which is like constantly happening in this book.
I know. I'm like, figure it out, woman.
I'm like, oh.
Which, to be fair, there's a reason for that. And yes. The reason for that is back at the wedding, the human ambassador, no.
Senator,
governor, person. Thing ass face
mm-hmm.
Who is another key point was not voted back in, so there's going to be a new human in charge, and that's fucking with everybody's everything,
right? That's how we get from rather than children collateral, we have adult collateral now.
Yeah, because they she's not about the children swap thing,
right?
But anyway, Misery hears from this fuckwad that the werewolf that's coming to stay with the vampires is Lo's mate,
mm-hmm.
which I was a little confused about. So they're swapping important people. I got that. But why does Misery have to marry Lo, but Gabby, the werewolf that's going to go with the vampires, she's not marrying anybody. Why is there this marriage, but there's no other marriage?
That was a point of confusion for me. I was like, but why get married, though? Why aren't you just collateral like you were before?
Yeah, they don't make that entirely clear.
It may have had something to do with like werewolf culture, where because he married her, she is 100% under his protection, and it would be considered an act of treason to try to harm her.
I also kind of had a flash of memory where the reason they had to pretend that she was his mate was because they don't know that Anna's his sister. And so he, to their knowledge, does not have any family members.
Right. So they didn't have anybody, the werewolves didn't have anybody important enough,
right,
to give to the vampires. So that's why they lied and told them that Gabby was his mate, which is why Misery thinks the entire time that Lo is pining after Gabby, who's
right
with the vampires for a year.
Right.
But it still doesn't explain why Misery had to marry Lo. I don't get it.
I think there's more vested interest in him protecting her than is the idea.
Yeah.
And it proves as a cover to humans that they're not really doing collateral, because this is a shift from previously the collateral alliance arrangement was between humans and vampires.
Right.
And it's the humans that don't want to continue this collateral thing. And so I think it's the cover of, oh, we're just having this vampire werewolf ceremony because we're forming this alliance and that's all it is. This isn't collateral again. And so I don't think it's necessarily known to the humans that Gabby is also collateral.
Oh.
Also, this is actually a older tradition that they used to do until the final wedding. There was like a mass murder
mm-hmm.
in the wedding.
Which both the werewolves and the vampires have a different perspective on.
Yes.
But essentially it came down to one wanted revenge over the other, and it was going to happen no matter what.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it does complicate Misery and Lo's relationship, because he's not willing to be forthcoming and honest. She doesn't know enough about anything because she's been a part of all the wrong worlds for a long time. And honestly, doesn't care. She is focused all her energy around Serena. That's her life. That's the only person she cares about.
She's like, the only person who actually gives a shit about me is the person I'm going to find.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense. When you have only one person, you're going to completely change your life to find them because they're missing.
Well, and it's to the point of being almost a little bit toxic, because that's the big fight that they have before Serena goes missing, is that she's telling her, you have to get a life. You have to go pursue things other than being my best friend. That's not a life.
Right.
And you have to care about something other than me.
Right. And she says it in kind of a vicious way, the way you do in fights when you just like say the mean thing to be mean. Right.
Well, and especially if you're as good of friends as they are, every friend knows the thing that the other person can say to just devastate them.
Right.
Like, I could be horrible to both of you if I wanted to. I do not want to. But we all know that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it.
Right. And so that's the other thing is, that's kind of conflating and confusing everything that's happening, is she doesn't know truly that something bad happened to Serena. For all she knows, she doesn't want to be contacted.
Right.
And so, and everybody keeps throwing that in her face, and she's like, no, I at my core know that that's not what happened. Right. But having even that little sliver of doubt, they keep throwing it in her face.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because Serena might disappear for a couple of days, but it's been months.
Mm-hmm. And it's also complicated for her and Lo, because he eventually does confess to her that his sister Anna is half werewolf, half human. But I want to talk about Misery and Lo as a couple.
Okay.
Okay. So one of the things I love about Lo, in spite of him being a lying liar, is that he's just so accommodating to who she is, and not in a judgy way, but he's like, oh, you want to do things this way? You want to sleep in a closet? Let me join you in the closet. It'll be fine. Oh, I told you I wouldn't show you my wolf. Well, now I'm going to join you in the closet as a wolf, and we're going to have cuddles. Like, he just... he's like, I'm going to meet you where you're at. And it's sweet and nice.
I love the wolf meeting, because she like walks out, because it was the night that everybody changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so like he had taken Anna and put her to bed and everything, you know, and then she walked out later and there's a big white wolf sleeping right outside her bedroom door.
Mm-hmm. That's after she gets poisoned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is after she gets poisoned. And she's like, Lo? Is it Lo? And he's just like pushing her back into the bedroom, like, no, no, go back. You go back to sleep now.
No, you sleep still. I've decided.
It's just so funny the way he's just like, she's like, yeah, I get it. All right. Are you Lo though?
But Lo also, again, getting back to the closet thing, in his wolf form is like, okay, I see you don't like the bed. And he grabs the pillow and the blanket and like puts it all in there for her. Mm-hmm. And then she gets all in. And I love that she looks at this big wolf, this huge wolf, and is like, did you want to be in here too? And he's like, yes, I did.
Yes. Thank you. Thank yes, you. I would like to be all up in your business.
She's like, can I pet you? Yes.
Yes.
More of that, please.
I encourage it.
Yes.
It's like the owl bear in BG3. Who's like, yes. Ooh, more.
More. Yes. It's so cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also appreciate the bath scene, which is a few handfuls of scenes prior to that. When they're still after the data from the other werewolves.
After the biting.
Yes.
And the scenting.
Yes. And you could tell, like, all of the people reading are like, this man is trying not to lose his mind.
Right.
And Misery is like, whatever, man. It's covered with bubbles. You don't even want me. It's fine. And he's like, oh, my God.
Are you decent? Yep. As she moves the bubbles over.
Yeah. And he's like, no, you're not.
But you're not. You're naked.
Please help me.
Everything is covered.
He's like, how am I supposed to survive this?
It was a very hot scene, though, because, of course, he can't just be like, oh, God, you're not, and walk out of the room. He has to be like, well, I came in here for a reason, so I'm going to walk over and sit down next to the bathtub and talk to you.
Yes. Well, and then she starts splashing him, and yeah, he grabs her ankle, and, of course, he's like, I'm just going to keep rubbing you under the water.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was going to get spicier. I was like,
oh. I did, too. And which, I feel robbed because I, girls, you know me, I love a good bath scene. A spicy bathtub scene. Oh, fucking love it.
Didn't he like touch her though in
no,
that scene?
Not there. Not okay.
Not where it not, counted.
Not overtly sexually. He was he was rubbing her like, she was rubbing her feet and her ankle and her leg, but never went that high.
Is there a later bathtub scene where he does that?
I don't think.
I swear to God, she was in the bath when he fingered her.
What?
Maybe I read a different book than you.
Oh, you mean the second bathtub scene.
Right. When she's sick and mm-hmm. then he draws her a bath. Mm-hmm. And they kind of do the same thing, only it goes a little bit further.
Well, and he's determined it has to be, the bath has to be just right. So he's got the right soap. He's got the right, like, bubble ratio. And he's like, in you go.
Mm-hmm. And is he just sitting outside? He's just sitting outside the bathtub again, like, talking to her and, like, touching her, mm-hmm. bathing her.
Yes.
I love a good bathing scene.
I do love a good bathing
scene. Yes.
And he's like using the washcloth and she's like, you don't have to use a washcloth.
That's okay. So that's one of the things I've seen highly debated recently on TikTok of like whether or not you should use a washcloth or not. And I was like, it doesn't really matter. The whole point was to get him to touch her with his bare hands. Like, I feel like you're missing the point. It's like, doesn't matter if it's a towel, loofah, whatever. The point is there's a barrier in the way.
Exactly. And then she like encourages him mm-hmm. to like touch lower mm-hmm. and more sensitive areas.
And he's like, we got to take this to the bedroom, Miss Ma'am.
But they don't. Then nothing happens.
Well,
I mean, he fingers her in the bath, mm-hmm. but then that's like the end of it. And I'm like, God damn it, Allie Hazelwood.
she knows how to tease a bitch. That's for sure.
So since we're talking about the sexy times, mm-hmm. One of the things that comes up is Lo has a knot, mm-hmm. right? We've read this before. We read the Gargoyles book, which we're talking about Deceived by the Gargoyles by Lillian Lark, which we just call Gargoyles. Because
mm-hmm. We love it.
It's the only Gargoyles that matter.
Correct. And so they're like going to town one time and he's like, listen, we are not compatible. This isn't going to work. And like lets her feel it. And then we get to nearly the end of the goddamn book. And I'm like, Allie Hazelwood, if you wrote nodding into this, but don't actually give it to me, I will mm-hmm. I will lose my shit.
I will throw a temper tantrum. I swear to God.
Well, okay. I want to back up to the scene where he does let her feel it. Because... Yeah. This is classic Allie Hazelwood, which is acknowledging that sex is awkward and weird.
Yeah.
And that it's going to be complicated. And so naturally, he's like trying to explain it to her about how they can never really like go further because he's like, biologically, you're not set up to handle this. Or so he thinks. And so
it's him wrong.
It's true. And so he's like, okay, let's just slow it down and let's talk about this. Mm-hmm. Although he was the one who was being aggressively fast,
right,
leading up to it. Like he was like, let's go. And she's like, okay, but like, I want to do it for real. And he's like, misery, everything we've been doing is sex. It doesn't have to be this one thing. But
I actually really appreciated that mm-hmm. line. I'm like, yes, it is not like everything it is. That they've been doing is a realm of sex. Like you don't, I get angry sometimes when people don't acknowledge sexual activity for what it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. The penetrative sex is not the only type of sex.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't want to hurt you. Right. And so I'm happy with us just doing this.
Yeah.
I don't need anything more from you. It's fine. And she's like, you know, trying to understand why they can't just have sex from her perspective, right?
Well, the other layer on top of it is she's a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
So she, I can understand like her being wanting to go there because she's like, I've never had anybody
mm-hmm.
that this was like a reality for us. So why are you stopping me?
Right.
I can finally do the thing.
And I generally don't like the like virgin thing mm-hmm. very much. I actually did not mind it because there was a logical reason for the fact that she was.
Right.
Like, it's not that she just, oh, I was waiting for the perfect man. No, it's because the vampires, because they sent her away to be collateral, all see her as a traitor, even though, you know, she had no choice in all of this. The humans would know if they were touching her, if she that she was a vampire, because she is multiple degrees lower in body temperature than a human.
Well, not only that, but she says at one point, she's like, I wouldn't be comfortable doing it with a human because I would be lying to them the entire time.
Exactly. Right. And then where wolves and vampires are supposed to be kill on sight to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I understand and I appreciate the fact that there is a very logical reason why she has not ever had sex.
Well, and I also appreciate that Lo is not super experienced either.
Right.
And the experience that he does have is in stark contrast where he's lived in this other country where werewolves and humans interact a lot more. And yeah. So that's how
and vampires.
Yeah.
Like they all kind of live in harmony. They still are. Vampires are a little separated from everyone. Not separated. They mingle just mm-hmm. fine. But like they don't really hang very much with other people.
Well, and Lo is, you know, aversion to having his knot, because apparently mm-hmm. that only happens if you find your mate, if you even have one.
That's actually a fairly common thing in romance novels when they have the knot, is that it only happens for their mate.
Right.
So they're in the scene where he slows it down and then he gets off, she gets off, he gets off, and then he like has her touch the knot as it inflates, essentially.
Oh, when he like brought her hand down, I was like, oh yes, please.
Well, and he says something really sweet, like he's like, oh, I'm gonna think about you anytime this happens from now on, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she still doesn't get it.
Like, I know, she still is not putting together.
Like, okay, you're totally missing 2 + 2 = 4. Like, I don't
honey, you're a smart girl, figure it out,
right?
But the one thing she's not smart in is she has no social intelligence.
Oh, no.
Right.
So it makes sense that she keeps missing all of the cues where mm-hmm. we as the reader are like, bitch, how do you not get it?
Well, and she does finally put 2 and 2 together. Like, it's just so, and I feel like that's one of the like catalyst moments where she's like, wait a minute. And so then they go to meet up with her brother, who she's been having conversations with in the tongue, is what they refer to it as.
Yeah, which is just the vampire language.
Yeah.
Which I will say, I loved the way that Owen, her brother, and her had this like secret language, which isn't the tongue, that's just the vampire language. But they had this like distinct way of talking to each other when they wanted to like communicate secretly, mm-hmm. which is to like almost tell stories that are fake to mm-hmm. each other to indicate like, this thing, I'm trying to tell it to you, but I'm going to tell it to you in this very like obtuse way.
Mm-hmm.
And like they both, I thought it was a really interesting take on the like twin language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they end up, he's like, we need to meet. We need to talk. Some shit's going down that I can't even tell you in our secret, not secret language. Right.
Right.
And so they go to meet and she sees him interact with Gabby and she's like,
low.
That's your fucking mate. That's how you talk to your mate. And he said she mentions like what she's been studying in school, and immediately after they're in the car driving away from it and she's like, what did Gabby study in school? And he's like, I don't know. And she's like, what did I study in school? And he's like, list it off all the way down to her minor. And she's like, wait, hold the phone.
Right. Eventually her like intellectual brain is like, why would he not know what his mate is studying in school, especially because he first asks her, like, oh, what are you studying? If it was like law or something like that. And Gabby's like, no, electrical engineering.
Right.
So not even something that's similar.
No.
Yeah.
That you could easily mistake. And when Misery asks him about it, he just like has all of the details. And she's like, wait a minute. Something is starting to not act up. Right. Add up.
Right. Which leads us to the confrontation scene.
The third act breakup.
Yeah. I didn't like it.
I didn't like it either.
I wanted to punch him.
I was like, you gaslight. I literally was screaming at the book. And I was like, you gaslighted motherfucker.
So Misery takes him to her old apartment. They get hot and heavy. Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They get hot and heavy. Still not nodding. And she's like, I am your mate. Mm-hmm. Like, she finally, it like confronts him on it, and he's like, no, you don't understand. And he keeps using this fucking phrase of like, stop talking about weird things that you don't understand,
right? Which is just mean.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was like I would smack you upside the back of the head so hard. I don't even care if it would get me killed. Just be like, boom, dust, stop it.
And that was the point where I didn't understand why he's doing this anymore. Yes. Because like, up until then, he probably was confused himself. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Why am I getting this vibe for a vampire? And then I don't want to trap her into this or make her feel obligated to me because of this. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it's almost like Lo had stopped realizing what was happening with her. Like, dude, she's been all up in your shit for the last however long. Just fucking tell her.
Right? Doesn't she deserve to know?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's the way that he goes about it is by basically saying, like, this is just a fling.
Yeah.
This, like, and now it's over because you made it weird. How dare
you cheapen your relationship?
Yeah.
Sir.
Yeah.
And after he's already told her things like, I'm going to think of you every time I.
Right?
Like,
oh, I was so mad at this man. I was like,
sir, I'm going to punch you in the nut.
I swear to God. It was just mean. It was like from top to bottom. It was just mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've read many of fights in romance novels there. You know, that shit happens. This one hurt me mm-hmm. emotionally. I was like, sir.
And also there was no reason for it.
Yeah.
Well, and for me, like energy wise, the book never recovers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We rush towards a speedy resolution to everything that happens. She gets kidnapped.
By packmate
Mick, who is the one of the few werewolves that she thought liked her.
Yep.
And he did. He's just also under duress because his son has been kidnapped. And she finally finds best friend. Yay!
Best friend!
Best friends forever. Let's fight some werewolves.
Yeah. So
vampires. They're not fighting the werewolves.
Well, and also the werewolves.
To get out.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, they don't know that they're not fighting the werewolves at
first.
That's
true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we find out that Serena is half werewolf, half human, which was pretty heavily foreshadowed, mm-hmm. I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're trying to understand why is she so interested in this little girl who's half right. or half werewolf, half human, especially because her reporting was financial. Right. So it doesn't make sense, right?
Well, and the addedness that you know enough about her because you have learned about her through Misery's eyes that she would never involve a child in mm-hmm. something like this. She's like, I don't care what she was researching. The moment she realized that there was a child involved, she wouldn't have reported on it.
Right. So why is Serena still looking into it?
Right. Yeah. And they do have this really touching, like, it felt very realistic to a friend like reconciling conversation yeah. where she's like, I didn't know if you would even like look for me because I was so mean to you the last time we spoke, and they're like, oh no. Right. It was yeah. that felt very natural.
I do like that from that point on, as soon as Serena is back in Misery's life, Serena is also the person who is always with her.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
mm-hmm.
like, oh, Lo, like she finds out that Lo is also there and he's going to save Misery and he's going to save Serena from her dad.
Yeah.
Who is the kidnapping ass face. But
I mean, no one was shocked on that end. I was like, oh, yeah, of course yeah. it's fuck face.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But when after that happens, and we can talk about that, but after that happens and Misery is like recovering, And after Serena like recovers from her shifting, it's Serena that's always with her. And I thought that also felt really accurate. Like, yeah, I get you have this relationship with Lo that's may or wherever it stands, who knows? But the person that should be comforting you and that should be with you like the entire time is your best friend who you thought could have been dead for the last several months.
And it makes sense that it's only with Serena that she chooses to return to where the werewolves are, that she's sort of like, I don't know where I stand with Lo, but I know where I stand with her. And so if she's going there, so am I.
And it's logical, too, that Serena would then go there because she needs help to understand changes. She like she's been doing this alone for a while, and she's kind of gotten to the point where she's like, oh, I don't have to, though.
Right.
Like, I don't have to hide this from the werewolves. They will help me through these transitions.
I really liked the scene, though, when everybody is in her dad's study and Owen, because Serena thought Owen's on my side. He's going to, you know, work within the political structure of the vampires to better, because like he hates the collateral, he hates the way everybody's treated, all this stuff, he's gonna make things better. And then Lo and Owen come in as if Owen had captured Lo.
Yeah, I had one moment of, don't you fucking dare, Owen.
Right.
Like she did a good flicker of doubt in my mind. I'm like, no.
I know, I was kind of like, where is this man standing?
I was like, you have better come back to me, bud.
Well, Owen even says, like, you thought I did this naughty, didn't you?
Right.
I'm better than that.
You didn't trust me.
How dare you, sister?
But I really liked in that moment where they start doing the double speak again, when her dad, I don't remember his name, is saying, Serena couldn't even shift. And it starts explaining like that he's the one that planted Serena in Misery's life so that he could keep an eye on this half breed. And they do the double talk again where Serena's talking to Misery in front of everyone and saying, I can actually shift. And so then Misery does the same thing back to Lo, and it's just like, I thought that was a very well thought out scene.
Yeah, she basically says that, you know, that thing that Anna, that you don't think Anna will ever be able to do, she will be able to when she's about this age.
She's about 25, which is the age they are.
And I'm just like, oh shit, yep.
I do also, though, think, like, is her dad, like, a complete incompetent fool? Because, like, I would be like, that's a really weird thing to say. Why are you saying that right now?
Well, Misery was saying it as if it was like her goodbye, right? Like, because her dad's about to slit her throat in an attempt to get Lo to do whatever he wants, which is, I think, to hand over Anna. And
which he will never do. And she would never forgive him for doing.
Right.
Well, and I like that what Misery says is, and is like, it's actually the first time she says, I love you, I think, to him, is, if you were to ever do this, I would love you less. Like, that's how she says, I love you. But she's saying goodbye, and she's using that as a trick. A tricky, tricky trick.
It was a good tricky, tricky trick.
Yeah.
I really did appreciate Owen being like, you thought I did you dirty. I'm like, I did for a minute, bud. I did. I was real disappointed in you, buddy.
Well, and at one point, the topic gets brought up, actually, you know, Misery could take over. And Owen's like, she could. That would be fine.
I guess technically.
You are correct.
He's a supportive king.
He's like,
not happy about it, but no one
expects really want
him to
it, sister, you can have it. It's not like I did all the work to get us here.
And then Lo just disappears, which I was like, dude, you're not even gonna talk to her? What the fuck?
Yeah,
like, I get that she needs her space and she's dealing with like her best friend, but also, like, you could just have a conversation.
Well, and then so when the two, Serena and Misery, go to Lo's house and she's like thinking she's just gonna pick up some of her things, she finds them already fucking in boxes.
Yeah.
And assumes the worst. She's like, oh, so we're done, I guess. This sucks. Misread all the signals. And he's like, I mean, you could stay. Please stay. Please stay. I would love it if you would stay forever.
I'm just redoing your room to put the cool vampire windows in.
Yeah.
So you don't have to sleep in the closet.
And she's like, oh, that's actually really nice.
It's very nice of you.
I just didn't want your stuff getting broken.
Yeah.
And then we finally get the nodding scene.
We do.
Oh, it was a good nodding scene.
It was. I was a little disappointed that the fact that she's a virgin didn't come back up. It was like she was just primed and ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think the idea was that it was showing that, like, they mention a few times throughout the book that being someone's mate also can change your biology. Yeah. And so I think this comes back to, again, to Allie Hazelwood being a nerd. She's like, this whole time, every step they got closer to that, her biology was changing.
Sure. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it was good.
It was good.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
It still is like, there's the first 3/4 of the book and then there's the last quarter for me.
Yeah.
And they're not, they're just... You fucked it up, Lo. You fucked it up.
Yeah, his whole third act breakup felt pretty forced, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it was necessary.
No.
No.
Like from a plotting, writing perspective, I think you still could have gotten the entirety of the story almost exactly the same way without him having to storm off.
Right.
Yeah. Right. She could have very well been kidnapped. Something could have come up. He'd be like, hey, take her home. I have to go do this. And he wouldn't have had to break up with her. And it would have been exactly the same outcome without me wanting to taint punch him.
Well, and they could have been interrupted mid-conversation before he got to the point of being able to, like, answer her one way or another. So it still's in limbo. Yeah. Right.
Right.
And then everything plays out the same.
Right. Because she could still be, like, uncertain of that relationship with him because they never really got to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he could still want to back off because, hey, you have Serena now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't you want to be with her for, like, a little bit, like, some time?
And he's very well established that it does not matter what she wants, he will give it to her.
Correct.
So if he's not sure if she wants him now, like, he's not gonna press the issue. That's
right.
Not...
She got what she wanted out of the whole thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just a small change, small little rewrite corner.
Right.
And it's the exact same book, only better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I did really like, though, at the end, his, like, kind of uncle / big brother figure. Is it Keon?
I've been reading it Conan.
How did you listen to it?
And it's not how it's spelled.
I don't remember how it's said.
It's spelled
K-E-O-N.
Yeah. Anyway, so he shows up to bring Anna back because he's been, while all this shit was going down, Anna's been hiding out with him. And immediately he starts to walk in the door and sees Serena and is just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. I'm expecting that we're going to get that book eventually. In the interview where she was saying she wants to write another one, she's like, I've already committed that these books are coming out next. Like, that's the only obstacle, folks. She's like, it's coming. You just might have to wait.
Yeah. Especially because his character, I was so fascinated with whenever he was on the page. He was just sassy and he loved to cause trouble everywhere. And I was like, I like you.
Yeah. And it's going to be an age gap.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Faded Maids, obviously.
Obviously.
It's going to be confusing because she doesn't, you know, like, anything about werewolves.
Yeah. The whole reason she's in werewolf country is so that Juno, the gal, the one of the werewolf seconds, is going to teach her how to wolf. And honestly, I thought for a second those two were going to get together.
Same.
I would not be upset about that.
Right? Same. I was like, oh, plot twist.
I will say I do like an age gap when it's like a not like 18-year-old and someone much older. I like it when it's, you know, like, she's 25. Cool. She is old enough to be her own person. Not that 18-year-olds aren't their own people, but, like,
they're stupid.
They're stupid.
They're barely not children.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's not that much older. Like, I think he said he was about 10 years older than Lo. And Lo is a couple years older than Misery.
Yeah.
So by that math, I say 12 years.
It's probably something 12 to 14-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be plenty of tension, though, right? Mm-hmm. Like, kind of the same vibe of him not wanting to put that shit on her while she's just trying to figure out how to live and exist.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I gotta say this, because there seems to be some kind of confusion about why we like these books. I'm sorry, the man's in love with her from the jump.
That's such a, we've talked about it, I don't think on mic, but we've talked about it so many times, the three of us, how compelling it is to the idea of fated mates, where this person is like already in love with you, mm-hmm. and is like not compelled in a bad way, but compelled to be like, I never want to hurt you. I mm-hmm. never want to betray you. I always want to see the best for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
A truly safe person to be around.
Yeah. Yes.
That is male. Like, that in and of itself is compelling. Right. Right. And then you add on top that, like, pretty much all the flaws you got, he's like, yeah, that's cute.
This works.
Woo, that's nice. Yeah. I don't get the confusion at all. Also got to say, if you've never read a book that has the knot situation, this is a really good entry point book.
It is.
Yes. Yeah.
I confused them with Deceived by the Gargoyles.
Well, there's the difference in this one than like Deceived by the Gargoyles. Deceived by the Gargoyles, the knot is always present.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in this one, it kind of seems to just like be flaccid like the rest of his dick.
Until
it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it is a very chill way to get into understanding this.
Mm-hmm.
And also the like aftercare while they're still stuck together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was so adorable. And he just like rolled them over and cuddled them up and like she fell asleep.
Yes. So sweet. Ugh. Yeah.
So what would you guys give The Spice?
I give it like a 3.5. It wasn't the spiciest book, but the spice that we had was well written. And I will say some of the tension moments made me want to claw off of the chair I was sitting on.
Yeah.
I was also at a 3.5 for what Danny just said.
Yes, that. Agreed. Consensus. Yeah. Just like I said, that like sentient scene alone, like, ooh, I'm going to read that again.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So romance. This is a little bit trickier for me.
Yeah. I think maybe a 3. I don't dislike their relationship. I like their relationship. I actually like that they kind of get to know each other and they have like inside jokes and stuff because she's constantly making fun of the fact that he doesn't know how to do shit with technology and stuff like that. They got to know each other over time, which I always appreciate in a romance novel, because that is something that is ultimately skipped a lot, especially with fated mates sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do appreciate that they actually did get to know each other and form a friendship rather than just a fuck ship to start out with.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like, on one hand, I want to give it a 2.5 because fuck that third act breakup. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But on another hand, I did like a lot of the other scenes. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't think it's enough to give it a 3.5. So I think I'm going to stick with a 3 with Danny.
I kind of waffled for similar reasons. I really liked their romance leading up to it, that third act breakup. And honestly, without it, it might even be a 4.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it did disrupt everything for me. And so I'm going to also go with a 3.
What about your overall rating?
I gave it a 4. I actually really liked this book. I liked the cute moments and I loved the moments with Anna and the world building. I really appreciated it as well because she gave them this whole culture that gave very logical reasons for why they were doing certain things.
You know, there's some aspects of it that I want to give it a 4.5, but I don't think it really lives up to a 4.5. Now that I'm thinking about it and thinking of other books that kind of live in that world for me. So I think I will also go with a 4. It was really, really, really good. There's just a few things that I disliked. I disliked how the scenes kind of jumped a little too much. Mm-hmm. Like that really bothered me.
I didn't notice it as much in the audiobook because it was a duet.
Mm-hmm.
Reading. Yeah. So and that could have saved things. Sometimes that does save things a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it also fucks with things because then I don't know, are you saying this thing out loud or are you saying it in your head?
True.
The best narration? Audiobook readers can tell the difference. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
These were pretty good.
Yeah, but I don't know. I can't get kind of past the third act breakup, which I know we've kind of beaten to death. So I'm just gonna stick with a 4.
Mm-hmm. For me, the first 3/4 of this book is a 5. Mm-hmm. I'm in. You sold me. You sucked me in. You played on tropes that I love. Right. I love a forced marriage. That's like the way that we did the forced marriage in this one is the best way, where it is voluntary and not voluntary all at the same time.
Yeah. Right.
Like, it's not like she could walk away. She could say no. There just are very severe consequences for a lot of people if she does.
Right. Yep.
Not severe consequences for her personally. And I really like that.
And it's not even people that she really even gives two shits about, but she still has the conscience enough to be like, this, a lot of shit is going to go down for mm-hmm. a lot of people who don't deserve any of this if I don't do this.
Right.
Well, and at the end of the day, she still loves her brother.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And she talks about it a little bit. Like, we don't know each other really anymore, but you're still my brother and I don't want to fuck with your life.
Right. So like I said, first 3/4, 5 stars. The second it goes to the third act breakup, it kind of becomes like a 2 for me.
Yeah.
So I landed on a 4 as my final rating for overall. And I just hope that we don't do it like that in the future, Allie. We'd be nice to our characters.
Right.
We'd
be nice to our characters.
Just saying.
So what are your guys' recommendations then?
We've talked about it a lot in this book. I'm going with Deceived by the Gargoyles, mainly because I like the nodding. And I really like Deceived by the Gargoyles, and I will give any excuse to be like, read this book.
Yeah. So check out that episode. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Nudge, nudge.
Nudge, nudge. By Lillian Lark. Sorry, I did not say that.
I would recommend the book A Little Too Familiar by Lish McBride. It is a werewolf and witch pairing. It's the stakes are much lower in that book. This guy moves in with his friend, and his friend has roommates, and one of them is this witch. And so they're in this kind of like forced proximity kind of situation, but the voice of the narration is also really sassy and reminds me a lot of like Misery's internal voice. So I would check that out.
I'm going to recommend Wolf Gone Wild by Juliet Cross. It's also a witch werewolf pairing, and the werewolf has been cursed, and the witch happens to be particularly good at breaking curses. And so he finds that just her like being in his presence helps, but her touch is like, oh, thank God for relief.
Right.
And so, yeah. I would recommend that. It's a lot of fun. And it's the opener to the Stay a Spell series.
I do think, though, the political shit that happens in Resting Witch Face, which was the one that I just finished, is very similar to the political shit that happens in this book.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just jump into that book. So,
no. Yeah.
You'd miss a whole punch.
Yeah.
Okay. That's our recommendations, folks. If you like this episode, please find us out there on the socials at Wrong Dust Jackets, or you can go to our website at wrongdustjackets.com. You can find all the episodes we're going to be doing coming up next. You can go to our blog and read other reviews we have of books, or you can just go out there on all of the places that you find the podcasts and please give us 5 stars, drop a comment, go on to YouTube if you like to listen there. And since Google Podcast is away, you can actually find us on YouTube Music because that's where everything got transferred to. So that's what I've got, folks. Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.